Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, February 9th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, MMH works on vax requirement. COO, hospital still hoping last 54 employees will either receive vaccination or required exemption by February 14th. By Stuart Doreen. Midland Health Chief Operating Officer Stephen Bowerman said Tuesday that Midland Health has almost 2,000 employees. He added that close to 97% of them are vaccinated or have received religious or medical exemptions. For the remaining, the countdown continues to receive that exemption or first vaccination before the February 14th deadline set to help Midland Memorial abide by federal guidelines. Bowerman expects that 54 number to drop, and quickly. He said the exemption committee was scheduled to meet Tuesday to receive another 16 exemption requests. Potentially, that could get us down to about 38 employees, Bowerman said, with still about a week to go. In January, the U.S. Supreme Court decided to allow the Biden administration to proceed with a vaccine mandate from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Service. As of February 14th, if an employee has not received a first dose of vaccine or does not have an exemption, that person will be placed on 30-day unpaid leave. At that time, the employee can evaluate what he or she wants to do. On March 15th, an employee must have had a second dose or exemption in place. At that point, if there's been no movement, an employee hasn't received his or her first dose or hasn't yet received an exemption or applied for an exemption, then that person likely will be removed from the workforce, Bowerman said. Bowerman said during the press conference that Midland Health has provided well over 200 exemptions, and the vast majority are religious exemptions. Bowerman said the qualifications for the religious exemption are less rigid than the medical exemption, noting it's pretty easy to get the religious exemption if you apply. He hoped that the remaining Midland Health employees will consider that or change their mind about vaccination. He added the impact of losing 38 employees won't be dramatic, as there is no hot spot or department with so many potential losses that it would force a shutdown of services. Still, hospital officials have said from the time that federal guidelines were put into place that they didn't think the mandate was accomplishing a lot other than giving us some potential staffing challenges. Yes, we're very relieved every time we get one vaccination card faxed in to our employee health group, or we have one more exemption that has been granted, Bowerman said. It's a big relief for the hospital and for the fellow workforce. If we lose one nurse on the floor, there's a chance that others are going to have to take one additional patient or a handful of additional patients, or if we lose a respiratory therapist, that's more rounding for the rest of the staff. Our staff has been working really hard for the last 2 years. A lot of people have left our organization to go travel and chase the additional compensation that's out there, but obviously a big group of people have stayed employed here, continue to take care of their community, and we're very grateful for them. So, every employee that we get vaccinated or receives an exemption and we know is going to be at work next Monday, we're very grateful for that. This article is entitled, Details Provided in Hotel Homicide Arrest. Crime Stoppers Tips Help Police Nab First-Degree Murder Suspect. By Mercedes Cordero. A Midland man is facing a murder charge after publicly released surveillance footage and Crime Stoppers tips led to his arrest. Javon Elliston, 25, is charged with first-degree murder in the death of 54-year-old Edward Demick. Midland police were dispatched at 11:42 a.m. Sunday to a hotel room in the 3100 block of West Wall Street in reference to a deceased person. Officers found Demick on the floor with a bedding cloth draped over him, according to an arrest affidavit. MPD detectives contacted a family member of Demick, who stated he had gone to the Detour Bar on Saturday night and got too drunk to drive, so he decided to get a hotel room. Hotel employees stated Demick was alone and appeared intoxicated when he checked in, according to the arrest affidavit. Hotel employees received noise complaints early Sunday morning. An employee went up to the room and noticed the door partially ajar and being held open with the door's latch, according to the arrest affidavit. The employee told police someone from behind the door stated they were naked. The person, who to the employee said sounded like a man, said the noise complaint was coming from down the hallway. After reviewing the surveillance video, detectives were able to see Demick enter and leave the room briefly. Before exiting his room, Demick looked down the hallway as if he was hiding from someone, according to the affidavit. At 2:07 a.m., a man, later identified as Elliston, is seen arriving at Demick's room and waiting outside. Surveillance video showed the hotel employee arriving at Demick's at 2:12 a.m. in reference to the noise complaint. At 5:50 a.m., Elliston is seen leaving Demick's room carrying two white bags believed to be bed sheets wrapped around Demick's belongings, according to the affidavit. Guests in the next room to Demick's told detectives they overheard the disturbance and heard someone say, "You are going to die tonight," according to the affidavit. MPD issued an arrest warrant and arrested Elliston on Monday afternoon after several Crime Stoppers tips helped identify him. Elliston is being held at Midland County Jail on a $1 million bond. This article is entitled "Roundtable Discussion Takes Look at Immigration's Impact." Political Discourse Has Overshadowed Contribution of Immigrants by Mella McEwen. Midlander Don Evans served as U.S. Secretary of Commerce in the first term of fellow Midlander George W. Bush. Participating in a roundtable discussion, The Palette of America, he said two moments stand out from that time, both related to immigration. One was delivering a speech in front of the Statue of Liberty. "To be on Ellis Island, what it stands for, and its importance was a moving moment for me," he said during the discussion at the Barbara and George H.W. Bush Convention Center. The second was traveling the world and meeting with everyone from school teachers to mechanics to the leaders of nations, all of whom marveled at what America has accomplished. "That is because," he said, "those living in America have the freedom to compete in the economic marketplace, and that competition breeds innovation, which leads to higher productivity and economic advancement." What is overlooked amid the rhetoric about immigration is that America needs immigrants to fill jobs. "America needs the skills and talents immigrants can bring," said Evans. He said 40% of the nation's top 500 countries were founded by immigrants or their children. "That's their contribution to America," he said. His advocacy for immigration, as it does for his former boss, stems from compassion, Evans said. "Compassion is one of the hallmarks of this great country we live in." The event preceded the opening of an exhibit of the former president's portraits of various immigrants that were published in his book, Out of Many, One. As Holly Kuzmich, executive director of the George W. Bush Institute, noted during the evening, the goal of the book and exhibit was to give people a look at immigration, what it is, what it looks like, how complicated it is. One of those featured in the book is Javed Anwar, founder of Midland Energy, Inc. and Petroplex Energy, Inc., who came to the United States from Karachi, Pakistan, at the age of 18. Anwar, who was raised by a single mother and her parents, recall his mother wanting him to be a doctor so that he could care for the less fortunate. But, he said, biology got in the way. Those big long names got in the way, he said. He switched his interest to engineering. After graduation, he told the audience, his mother and grandparents came to him and said, "We love you very much," and gave him enough money for one semester's tuition and boarding and a one-way plane ticket to attend the University of Wyoming. After earning a petroleum engineering degree, he found his way to Midland and began working for Roy Williamson. While he patterned himself after Williamson, he said he never forgot his upbringing in Pakistan. "My mother always told me, 'If you are blessed, you must share it,'" said Anwar. Laura Collins, director, Bush Institute SMU Economic Growth Initiative, George W. Bush Institute, said the waves of immigrants currently being seen at the border are because those immigrants are fleeing poverty or violence and governments that can't care for them. The only way they can find their way into the U.S. is to claim asylum. But she said needing a job is not grounds for asylum. What is needed is a way for immigrants to apply for green cards or temporary work permits. Another way to address these immigrants is to help those countries immigrants are fleeing to develop economies that work and create jobs, she said. "I want immigrants to come here, but I don't want them to come here because they have nowhere else to go," Collins said. Failing to achieve immigration reform during his second term was a great disappointment to Bush, said Evans, who said the issue has become too politicized. "Until they decide to take politics out of it and solve the problems, it will be hard," he said, decrying politicians that, quote, "won't work with each other on what's best for America," unquote. This is the Texas from the front page. This article is entitled MPD, Lubbock Man Dies in Collision, by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. A Lubbock man died Tuesday after an accident on State Highway 349 north of Midland. Midland police reported that around 1:30 p.m., the Midland Police Department and the Midland Fire Department were dispatched to the 7200 block of State Highway 349 in reference to a fatality accident. Upon arrival, officers noted a truck tractor towing a cargo tank was struck from behind by a 2019 Cadillac Escalade, according to a police department release. The driver of the Escalade, Marvin Leon Summers, 69, from Lubbock, was killed because of injuries sustained in the accident. Upon initial investigation, MPD officers determined that the truck tractor was in the outside lane and attempting to make a right-hand turn onto a private drive, according to MPD. While attempting to make the turn, the Cadillac failed to control speed and struck the back end of the trailer. The next of kin has been notified. The investigation is ongoing. This article is entitled Oil Slips for Second Day, with Focus on Geopolitical Risks and Iran, by Julia Fanzarez, Bloomberg. Oil fell sharply as traders weighed ongoing tensions in Eastern Europe and the resumption of Iran nuclear talks. West Texas Intermediate futures declined 2.2% in New York trading on Tuesday. French President Emmanuel Macron said that he received assurances from his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, that he would not escalate the situation further with Ukraine, while Moscow cast doubt on his comments. Additionally, Iran's nuclear talks appeared to gain momentum. Oil, natural gas, and metals have surged in recent weeks, driven by fears that Russian forces may invade Ukraine, which could spark retaliatory sanctions by the U.S., Russia has repeatedly denied any such plans. A lot of the geopolitical risk is priced into crude currently, so any progress, even small, could take a bit of that premium out of the price, said Rebecca Babin, senior energy trader at CIBC Private Wealth Management. It will not induce a massive sell-off unless something concrete happens. But if things are not getting worse, crude starts to fade off the highs. The possibility of more Iranian oil comes as global supply has increasingly been unable to keep up with surging demand from economies emerging from the pandemic. OPEC Plus is struggling to meet its pledged output increases, in part because of outages in Libya, while traders are looking to see how much the U.S. shale patch will lift output this year. With prices hanging around their highest since 2014, some believe oil executives are showing signs of abandoning pledges to hold the line on drill budgets. U.S. shale producers are poised to boost spending by almost 40% this year, based on comments and plans revealed during recent earnings presentations, Citigroup Inc. analyst Scott Gruber wrote in a note to investors. Additionally, the Energy Information Administration sees U.S. oil production growing more than the government previously expected, as the price rally drives producers to boost drilling. Supply will average 12.6 million barrels a day in 2023, an increase from the EIA's previous estimate of 12.41 million, according to the data. Despite the easing seen in the futures rally, the physical market has rallied sharply in recent days, with benchmark dated Brent assessed by S&P Global Platts at more than $98 a barrel on Monday, the strongest since 2014. It's the latest in a string of bullish signs in the key North Sea market. Another possible impact on physical markets could come from lingering disruptions at a number of U.S. oil refineries after a bout of cold weather. Those affected include the nation's second largest, potentially disrupting both crude intake and oil product deliveries. After markets closed, the industry-funded American Petroleum Institute reported that U.S. crude supplies fell about 2 million barrels last week, according to people familiar with the data. The data also showed stockpiles in Cushing, Oklahoma, the biggest storage hub in the U.S., declined by about 2.5 million barrels. The U.S. government will release its weekly inventory tally today. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, U.S. Raises Forecasts for Record Crude Oil Production in 2023, by Sheila Tobin, Bloomberg. U.S. oil production will grow even more than the government previously expected, as a scorching price rally drives producers to boost drilling. Oil supply will average 12.6 million barrels a day in 2023, an increase from its previous estimate of 12.41 million, according to Energy Information Administration data. The current all-time high of 12.3 million barrels a day was set in 2019. For this year, volumes were also revised higher to 11.97 million barrels a day from an earlier projection of 11.8 million, the EIA said in its monthly short-term energy outlook report. This extra U.S. supply is a welcome boon for President Joe Biden, who has asked suppliers to raise production in order to help tamp down energy prices that are contributing to the highest inflation in decades. In the wake of oil prices surging to their highest since 2014, two of the largest U.S. oil companies announced they would increase production by double digits in the Permian Basin, America's most prolific oil patch. Citigroup Inc. said in a report this week that oil prices appear to have reached a level that are too tempting for shale executives to ignore, and are showing all the signs of abandoning pledges to hold the line on drilling budgets. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, February 9th. Amber Lee Berry. Amber Lee Berry of Lubbock went home to be with her Lord and Savior on February 2nd. A visitation will be held from 6 to 8 p.m. on Thursday, February 10th, at the branch at NPW in Midland. A celebration of her life will begin at 4:30 p.m. Friday, February 11th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Chapel. Amber Lee was born July 30th, 1981, in Odessa, to Kara and Russell Berry. Amber Lee is survived by her mother and father, Kara and Rusty Berry, sister Kelsey Berry, brother and sister-in-law Aaron and Dylan Berry, her beautiful and smart niece and nephew Ella Berry and Thomas Berry, as well as aunts and uncles and many loving cousins. Amber Lee is preceded in death by her grandmothers and grandfathers, Janice and Paul Clark, and Betty and Joe Berry. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Breaking Bread in Midland or Field's Edge in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Anita Elms. Anita Childress Elms passed from this world on February 4th. Anita was preceded in death by her son Stephen in 1988, her sister Doris Smith in 2008, and her husband Bill in 2012. Celebrating her life are her children, Tracy, Terry, and Clark, and their families, as well as sisters Jackie Bell and Jane Widner, and her extended family. A family burial will take place on Friday, February 11th at 2 p.m., and a memorial service at 3 p.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home, followed by a reception at the Odessa Country Club. In lieu of flowers, memorial gifts may be made to the Permian Basin Rehabilitation Center or to the Texas Exus Stephen Wade Elms Memorial Scholarship. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Bobby Wood Scott. Bobby Wood Scott, 96, passed peacefully away in her sleep Saturday, February 5th. Bobby was born November 16, 1925, in Wichita Falls, to Ollie Lee Wood and May Vaughn Wood. Bobby is preceded in death by her parents, Ollie Lee and Mary Vaughn Wood, her sister Eleanor Wood Simpson, and Bobby's husband Frank Scott. She is survived by her daughter, Eleanor Scott Leeper, and husband Stan of Midland, son Tommy Scott and wife Jan of Shreveport, Louisiana, four grandchildren, and seven great-grandchildren. The graveside service will be held at Rest Haven Cemetery in Midland on Saturday, February 12th at 3 p.m. In lieu of flowers, please make a donation to Hospice of Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Iona Vasacek. Atha Iona Lampley Vasacek passed on February 3, 2022, just before her 92nd birthday. She came into this world on February 9, 1930, in Benton, Illinois. Iona was predeceased by her father, Rolla Paul Lampley, her mother, Alma Irene Sutton, her brother, Donald Lampley, her sister, Winona Arnold. She is survived by her son, Michael R. Vasacek of Midland, and his children, Kristen, Ashley, Lance Ashley, Savannah, Donnie, her son Mark Vasacek, and many grandchildren and 11 great-grandchildren. Viewing will be Thursday, February 10th, 6:30 p.m., Ellis Funeral Home. Service will be Friday, February 11th, 11 a.m., Christ Church Anglican, 5501 North Midkiff Road. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.ellisfunerals.com. James Sykes. James Barry Sykes was welcomed into the eternal presence of his Lord and Savior Jesus Christ on Friday, January 28th at Medical Center Hospital. Barry was born in Big Spring to Abbott B. and Melba Preston Sykes on July 14, 1954. Barry is predeceased by his father and mother, his brother Stephen Sykes, his maternal and paternal grandparents, and many extended family members. He is survived by his older sister, Judy Dalton, John of Cloudcroft, New Mexico, his youngest brother Nathan Sykes of Providence, Rhode Island, as well as many nieces, nephews, and cousins. Many friends will also cherish his memory. The memorial service for Barry Sykes will be at 1 p.m. Wednesday, February 9th at Grace Christian Fellowship in Odessa. Sunset Funeral Home and Cemetery is managing arrangements. In lieu of flowers, contributions can be made in Barry's memory to these scholarship programs: Barry Sykes Memorial Scholarship Award, Permian Football Booster Club. Barry Sykes Memorial Endowed Scholarship, University of Texas Permian Basin. For more information or online giving, please contact Marisol Chrisman at 432-552-2806. Norma Crowder. Norma Catherine Katie Crowder was born November 16, 1930, in Mills County, Texas, and was one of eight children born to Louis William, Jack, and Gladys Reinhardt Dennard. Katie was preceded in death by her parents, Gladys and Jack, brothers Jim and George, sisters Jacqueline, Rita, and Margaret. Katie is survived by her husband of 74 years, Kenneth Crowder, and their children, Larry and wife Wendy of Midland, Marcia Lovelady and husband David of Horseshoe Bay, and Melissa Missy Compton and husband Randy of Nashville, Tennessee. Seven grandchildren and seven great-grandchildren. Arrangements are under the direction of Stacy Wilkins Funeral Home, Goldwaite, Texas, for graveside service at Goldwaite Memorial Cemetery, Highway 16, on February 10th at 1 p.m. In lieu of flowers, family requests that donations be made to Hospice of Midland, Visiting Angels of Midland, or the charity of your choice. Robert Len Grimes. Robert Len Grimes of Granbury, Texas, passed away at the age of 67. The family will receive friends on Thursday, February 10th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Memorial service will be held on Friday, February 11th at 2 p.m. at First Baptist Church Chapel in Midland. Robert Len Grimes was born on August 6, 1954, to the late Ora Bell and Robert Leland Grimes in Comanche, Texas. He is survived by his wife Laura, his daughter Jennifer James and husband Sam, his son Robert Grimes and wife Bobby. He is survived by his beautiful granddaughters Bailey Grimes and Hannah James. He also leaves behind his sister Jeannie Miller and husband Tom and sister-in-law Leonora Grimes. He is preceded in death by his parents, his brother Sonny, and great-nephew Hank Apple. In lieu of flowers, please consider donation to the Field's Edge, P.O. Box 50068, Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Welch. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Sandra Rivera. Sandra Elaine Rivera Jackson, 63, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, February 5th. A gathering will be held from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Wednesday, February 9th, at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Sandra was born on January 9, 1959, in Midland, to Bill and Elizabeth Jackson. Sandra is survived by her husband Sergio, her kids William, Frank, and Nancy, her siblings Christopher, Mike, Katie, Kathy, and Cindy, as well as multiple nieces and nephews, six grandchildren, and three great-grandchildren. Sandra is preceded in death by her mother and father, Elizabeth and Bill Jackson. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Susie Wright. Susan Lynn Dale Wright of Midland passed away on February 3rd. Susie was born to Raymond and Catherine Dale on August 23rd, 1945, in Hempstead, New York. She is preceded in death by her parents, her husband David, her son Jerome Nolene, and daughters April Nolene Chavez and Beverly Lindquist. She is survived by her sister Dottie Wharton of Scottsdale, Arizona, her daughters Debbie Baxter, Gary, and Sue Nolene of Midland. She is also survived by 7 grandchildren, and 22 great-grandchildren. A celebration of life will be held on Thursday, February 10th at 11 a.m. at Crestview Baptist Church, with Dr. John Gerlach officiating. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Death Notices. Alvino Martinez Reyes, Jr. Alvino Martinez Reyes, Jr., 63, of Midland, passed away Saturday, February 5th. Viewing will be Wednesday, February 9th from 1 to 9 p.m. with a rosary at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral service is set for Thursday, February 10th at 2 p.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe. Bradford Graves. Bradford Lee Graves, 58, of Midland, passed away Thursday, February 3rd. Viewing will be Thursday, February 10th from 4 to 9 p.m., with a receiving of friends from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday evening at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral service is set for Friday, February 11th at 11 a.m. at Goodwill Baptist Church. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Eddie Gamboa. Eddie Gamboa, 61, of Midland, passed away February 5th. The family will receive guests from 7 to 9 p.m. Thursday, February 10th at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, February 11th at Community Baptist Church, with interment following at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, February 9th, 2022. County Hours Company for ARPA Funds by OA News. Settling an issue that had hung fire since last summer, Ector County Commissioners on Tuesday voted unanimously to contract with Grant Works Incorporated of Austin to help decide how $32 million from the American Rescue Plan Act should be apportioned, noting that $16 million was received last year with the same amount expected this year. Commissioners told Odessa insurance man Chris Crow, who had asked to speak even though he was not on the agenda, that Grant Works will make recommendations, but the final decision will be the court's. Judge Debbie Hayes said the most that the company working on an hourly basis will be paid is $175,000 to $200,000. And Precinct 1 Commissioner Mike Gardner said the commissioners needed to help to follow the 437 pages of federal guidelines it has been given. Precinct 2 Commissioner Greg Simmons said the money is for the purpose of helping the county recover from the loss of revenues it suffered during the pandemic. While the needs of Medical Center Hospital, Odessa Regional Medical Center, and other applicants will be considered, the court will probably keep some of the money for county operations, Simmons said. Crow is the husband of Ector County Republican Party Chairman Tisha Crow. Grant Works is a grant management company specializing in state and federal grant programs covering infrastructure, economic development, housing, and planning services, according to its website. Gardner and Precinct 3 Commissioner Don Stringer said before the 10 a.m. meeting that Midland and Rees counties are using the firm for the same purpose. Precinct 4 Commissioner Armando S. Rodriguez took part in the meeting by Zoom. Hayes's opponent in the coming primary, Dustin Fawcett, said he agreed Ector County must hire someone new to properly allocate the funds, but said it should be a new Ector County judge. Voters can directly hire a county judge whose job this is in the first place to do the job that taxpayers elect and pay them to do. Fawcett said federal funds belong to the people of Ector County, not to Ector County elected officials or to some third-party firm. It is the job of our county judge to hold public meetings. He said Lubbock County has held 14 meetings with their fellow taxing entities to decide how to properly disperse their funds in a way that best benefits the community in which they were elected to represent. He criticized what he called a lack of communication with fellow taxing entities, including the city and the hospitals, and holding no public meetings. In other business, the commissioners scheduled early voting and set March 1st for the jointly held Democratic and Republican primaries. Early voting will be conducted from Monday through February 25th in the elections office in the county administration building at 1010 East 8th Street and at Kellis Turner Community Center, the Globe Theater of the Great Southwest, and Salinas Community Building. A change this year to the early voting is that Westlake Hardware is not an early voting site. The Elegante Hotel will be a site. In other business, the commissioners appointed Odessa Slaymar Field Airport Board President Winston Kenworthy as airport manager, with Gardner explaining after the meeting that the position of manager has never been full-time, and the commissioners wanted the board to take more ownership and work as a go-between with the county. The airport's fixed base operator, Texas Aereo, remains in place. Victim advocates put in the work. UNIT strives to help those who have been impacted by crime. By Kim Smith. Imagine it. Suddenly, out of the blue, you become the victim of a crime. Your home is burglarized. You're assaulted, or something far worse happens to you or a loved one. Now imagine having to go through the criminal justice system when the police arrest a suspect. Suddenly you're thrown into a foreign world with various hearings, each one different, and everyone around you is using unfamiliar terms and going at supersonic speed. Worse yet, you have no idea if justice will be served or not. Well, if you're in Ector County, you can count on Yvette Ramirez, Christina Lopez, or two of their colleagues to come to your rescue. The four women make up the Ector County District Attorney's Victim Services Unit. Whether you are the victim of a misdemeanor or felony crime, members of the unit will help you through the entire ordeal. Ramirez, Victim Services Director, said they send out notices to keep victims aware of upcoming court dates, let them know the latest developments as the case progresses, and accompany victims to court. They'll also help victims deliver their impact statements during sentencing hearings and help them when they seek compensation for such things as funerals, moving expenses, and medical bills. The extent to which victims use their services depends upon the victims themselves. Some are content just getting notified about court dates and developments. Others lean heavily on the victim assistant coordinators for emotional support. The four coordinators, who are sometimes called victim advocates in other jurisdictions, are split between the four district courts, so they are paired with the same victims for the duration of the case, Ramirez said. I like for victims to build that relationship with us so they can feel comfortable talking to us and opening up to us. We want to make them feel secure, Ramirez said. We want them to know that we're there and that we're going to be with them every step of the way, and they don't have to stress and worry about things when they're here for court. By doing their job, it allows the prosecutors to focus on one thing, getting justice for the families, Ramirez said. This is the best group of victim advocates I've ever had the pleasure of working with. They all care about the victims they serve. I've seen them stay 3 to 4 hours late just to be there for the victims when a jury returns a verdict, said Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan. Helen McNeil knows firsthand the importance of victim assistance coordinators. Her son, Freddie McNeil, was murdered in the summer of 2017. The coordinators helped her and the rest of her family through every step of the process as his killers were held accountable through plea agreements and a trial. Whether they simply needed tissues, a hand to hold, someone to vent to, or an explanation, they were there, McNeil said. I couldn't go into the courtroom, and I was thinking, oh, please, go check on my mom, and they'd go check on my mom. They'd make sure my mom was okay, and they would sit with my mom. They would sit with me, and I'd start crying. They would come and say, do you need a walk around outside, McNeil said. They were just very, very attentive to me, my mom, and my aunt. You couldn't have asked for a better experience of what we're going through. They made it the best they could, and we couldn't ask for anything better, McNeil said. Ramirez and her coordinators attended annual training from the Texas District and County Attorneys Association, she said. Lopez, the assistant director, said during the last conference, the victim advocate coordinators were each given scenarios to work through. Victims often go through an array of emotions, including anger, and the coordinators need to know how to handle each one. It was really helpful to work with the other VACs. Everybody gave their ideas. What would you do? What are the next steps? She said. It helps, too, because when you come back, we get to apply things that we've learned from another county, Ramirez said. The best part of the job? The hugs they often receive when a case is resolved, although they love the bouquet of flowers they recently received, too, the women said. We had a family here, and I told the lady, your daughter's happy now, too. Justice was served, and she's with you in your heart. And she was like, oh, you're in my heart, too. You were so supportive, Lopez said. They say things like that, and it makes it worth it. District 81 Sheriff's VAC Landgraf by OA News. State Republican Brooks Landgraf on Tuesday was endorsed by sheriffs from every county in House District 81, a news release detailed. Seeking his fifth 2-year term, Landgraf picked up the endorsement of Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths. Sheriff Griffiths is dedicated to his community and serious about public safety, Landgraf stated in a news release. It's an honor to have his trust and confidence. I've supported law enforcement officers throughout my time as state representative, so I feel like I'm doing a good job when the county's number one lawman endorses me. During the 2021 legislature session, Landgraf filed House Bill 523 to allow county sheriffs in his district to be able to enforce commercial motor vehicle safety standards. This legislation was requested by sheriffs in Landgraf's district, where heavy truck traffic from the energy industry brings both prosperity and public safety challenges to the region. County sheriffs and deputy sheriffs in the counties of Andrews, Ector, Ward, and Winkler are now eligible to apply for certification to enforce commercial motor vehicle safety standards. Representative Landgraf is a man of his word, Griffiths said. He walks the walk and talks the talk. He doesn't just say he supports law enforcement, he takes action. He is the best man to represent our community in the Texas House. In addition to Griffiths' endorsement, Landgraf has been endorsed for re-election by Ward County Sheriff Farin Valley, Winkler County Sheriff Darren Mitchell, and Andrews County Sheriff Rusty Stewart. Landgraf picks up the phone when I call and always acts fast to ensure we have everything we need from the state. We have a strong working relationship and a strong voice in the House. Landgraf has been endorsed for re-election in 2022 by the Combined Law Enforcement Associations of Texas and the Texas Municipal Police Association. In addition to authoring HB 523 and sponsoring SB 901 to support local law enforcement during the 87th Texas Legislative Session in 2022, Landgraf co-authored House Bill 1900 to penalize cities that try to defund their police department. The bill eventually passed, going into effect on September 1, 2021. Landgraf said last year's statewide redistricting deleted Andrews County and added Loving County to the districts, which also includes Ector, Winkler, and Ward counties. Although the winner of the March 1st Republican primary will keep representing Andrews through the rest of this year. Landgraf is challenged by Odessan Casey Gray, who filed to run for Congress in California in 2016, but didn't appear on the ballot and then ran against now U.S. Republican August Pfluger in 2018. Quick hits. Pediatric Pfizer Vaccine Clinic. Ector County Health Department, 221 North Texas Avenue, has scheduled a pediatric Pfizer vaccine clinic from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. today. First and second doses available for children ages 5 through 11. For more information, call 432-498-4141, extension 0. Moderna Vaccine Clinic. Ector County Health Department, 221 North Texas Avenue, has scheduled a Moderna vaccine clinic from 8:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. and 1:30 p.m. to 4 p.m. Thursday. First, second, and booster doses are available for 18 years and older. Disney Princess, the concert. The Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North Farm to Market, 1788, Midland, will present Disney Princess, the concert presented by Pandora Jewelry at 7 p.m. today. Doors open at 6 p.m. For tickets or information, visit wagnernoel.com. Live debates. Basin PBS has scheduled 4 upcoming debates happening live from the Anwar Family Studio at Basin PBS. Candidates will take to the Basin PBS studio floor for a one-hour debate each. The community is encouraged to submit questions for each debate via the Basin PBS Facebook page. Basin PBS will ask as many questions as they are able. Moderators for the debates are Becky Ferguson, Basin PBS board member, Pat Canty, publisher of the Odessa American, and Emily Holova, president of the League of Women Voters of Midland. Today at 7 p.m., State Senate District 31 candidates Stormy Bradley, Jesse Quackenbush, Tim Reed, and Kevin Sparks. Thursday, 7 p.m., Ector County Judge candidates Debbie Hayes and Justin Fawcett. February 14th, 7 p.m., Texas House of Representatives District 81 candidates Casey Gray and Brooks Landgraf. In addition to their broadcast on Basin PBS, each debate will stream on the Basin PBS Facebook page and on basinpbs.org. Annual Permian Basin Prayer Breakfast. The annual Permian Basin Prayer Breakfast has been scheduled for 7 a.m. to 8:15 a.m. Thursday at the Bush Convention Center, 104 North Main Street, Midland. Food service will begin at 6:45. This year, we will have a panel of prayer warriors leading us in prayer, moderated by Carla Smith. Individual tickets are $10 and table sponsors are $200. Complete sponsorship form online and mail in checks. For more information, visit npbmidland.org. Free AARP Tax Aid. AARP is offering free tax assistance to seniors by appointment from Thursday through April 12th at the Northside Senior Center, 1225 Adams Avenue. Masks are required. To schedule an appointment, call 432-337-5281. Ratliff Stadium to be site of U.S. Coast Guard ceremony. OA News. Petty Officer Jeremy Crawford, a 2005 Permian High School graduate, will advance to Chief Petty Officer during a special ceremony at Ratliff Stadium at noon Friday. The rank of E7 Chief Petty Officer is one of the most prestigious ranks an enlisted member of the Coast Guard can achieve. He will be joined by family, friends, and representatives from the Coast Guard Recruiting Command in Washington, D.C. He chose Ratliff Stadium for its iconic history, his memories of spending Friday nights at the stadium and watching the movie Friday Night Lights being shot there during his senior year of high school. Since December, Petty Officer Jeremy Crawford has been on temporary assignment in Odessa, establishing a recruiting presence here in his hometown. Petty Officer Crawford is a 2005 graduate of Permian High School and competed on the Mojo swim team for 4 years. He also attended Burnett Elementary School and Bonham Junior High. After graduation, he enlisted in USCG. ECISD February Focus on Showing Love to Community by OA News. During the month of February, Ector County ISD is challenging students, staff, and the community to put love in action through a series of events that will culminate with a collection of new or gently used uniforms to be donated to students in need. Love in Action kicked off last week as ECISD students completed a pledge committing to showing love in action and encouraging them to share those pledges on social media using the hashtag ECISD-showlove. This week, the focus turns to taking care of ourselves. ECISD's parent engagement effort, called Empowered, offers some tips for self-care. You can find that information at the Love in Action page. Then, on February 17th, the ECISD Administration Building, 802 North Sam Houston, will be the location of the uniform collection. Donations of new or gently used uniforms will be collected for the ECISD Outreach Center to give to students who need them. Between now and then, uniforms can be dropped off at any school or office. All will be collected at the end of the day on February 17th. TEA announces nomination of 2022 National Blue Ribbon Designees by OA News. Austin. The Texas Education Agency announced Tuesday the nomination of 26 Texas public schools as 2022 National Blue Ribbon Schools Designees. Initiated by the United States Department of Education in 1982, the National Blue Ribbon Schools program recognizes public and private elementary, middle, and high schools that have highest student achievement and/or highlights where exemplary progress has been made in closing achievement gaps among student subpopulations. Since the program's founding, 9,000 schools across the nation have received this prestigious designation. In the Lone Star State, public schools are considered for nomination based on student performance on the first administration of the previous year's STAR assessment, as well as college and career data and graduation rates if applicable. This year's nominees highlight the diverse learning environments found across the state, with the inclusion of traditional elementary, middle, and high school campuses, along with magnet and early college high schools. These nominees also represent 12 of the state's 20 education service center regions, spanning from the Panhandle down to the Coastal Bend and from the Piney Woods of East Texas to the plains of West Texas. The nominated schools must now complete a rigorous application process conducted by the USDE. National award winners will be announced in September of 2022. Schools that receive the designation will be recognized as the National Blue Ribbon Schools Award Ceremony in Washington, D.C. Among the local nominees for exemplary high-performing schools are Garden City Elementary, Glasscock County ISD, Early College High School at Midland College, Midland ISD. Exemplary Achievement, Gap Closing Schools, Wink Elementary, and Wink Loving ISD.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.